All right, tonight we're going to wrap up our last presentation on evolution. I think John has kind of a finale next week that he's planning to do. We have been going through the fossil record and going through different aspects of what evolutionists would like us to believe concerning the fossil record. And as you notice from the title here, that the human evolution story, there is a story that they want to tell, and it's a big fiction story, a fantasy, a make-believe story, but of course that's not how they want people to see it. But we're looking at the actual evidence and kind of some of the process in putting together this story. And hopefully some folks remember the first few slides from last week, but we started to go through sort of one by one this chart that was published in a Time Life book back in 1965. The chart was the creatures on this chart are supposed to represent the lineage leading up to humankind here on the far right. The sequence there was put together by a paleontologist, Dr. Howard, in 1965. And this chart is sort of, and variations of this chart have become very used and well known amongst a lot of us. We've probably all seen some variation of it over time. And so we got through up to this point in the chart. What's kind of a, if you just look at this chart, and Brother John kind of put it in super simple terms last week. When we look at this chart, basically, how does it break down?
You got a group of apes on the left, and you got different types of humans on the right.
And that's exactly right. And so, as we've seen, we've gotten through a lot of these so far, and we're going to try to finish up the remainder tonight. But you know, all of these on the left-hand side here, these first five or six or seven, all evolutionists today, as we've seen, on every single one of those today believes that they're apes. So back in 1965, you know, there were different opinions about it. We even noted, however, though, that even Dr. Howard himself, and we'll see that again tonight with some of the ones here that we haven't covered yet, is even Dr. Howard made statements that indicated that these didn't belong in the lineage of mankind, and yet he put them in the chart. And that's part of this deception that we're seeing with evolution, is that it's not just mistakes. There are lots and lots of mistakes, obviously, that all scientists make, but that's including the ones that are studying paleontology and evolution. But beyond just simple mistakes or complicated mistakes, there's also outright fraud, and there's a lot of that is going to be kind of talked about in these slides. If you remember when we were talking about whale evolution and horse evolution, we saw some good examples of fraud there, and how particularly magazines, well-known supposed scientific magazines like National Geographic, despite them knowing certain facts, they were willing to publish things that they knew would be misleading. And we're going to see a lot more of that as we continue. And we've got a couple of, we're going to kind of go off the chart here for just a minute on a couple of different ones. But they're ones that are well known now for different reasons than they were originally. But the first one here is this fossil called Piltdown Man. Some of you may have heard that. So back in 1912, there was this claim that there was this million-year-old skull that was found. And there were all of these headlines, very sensational headlines, starting in 1912. And it kind of went on for about 40 years. And so this skull had been discovered by Dr. Arthur Woodward, who was a paleontologist there in England. He was one of the directors or head of the Natural History Museum in London, very prominent, well-known scientist. And so he discovered this skull in 1912. And, you know, this is an example of a headline. You know, so sort of put yourself back in 1912, so to speak, and imagine, you know, we're Bible-believing Christians, and here's 1912, and we wake up, you know, and we see the New York Times, and it says, Darwin's theory is proven true. And, you know, there's all these details about it. The scientists say the skull establishes human descent from apes, and it's thought to be a woman, and it goes on and says this creature couldn't talk, and all of these details about this creature. And so, you know, take yourself back to 1912, and you said the scientists are telling you Darwin's theory is proven fact now. And of course, that's the story that we want to get now as well, or we do get now from all over the place. And for the next 40 years, you know, there were all of these sensational kinds of headlines about Piltdown Man. It all turned out to be a hoax. 40 years later, 1953. So imagine living through that 40 years, and here's all these people that are making all these grand claims, and yet it all turned out to be a hoax. And ultimately, they actually even put a name on it. I personally, this seems to be a definite one here, but it's really hard to imagine that this couldn't have also involved Dr. Woodward and others at the London Natural History Museum. So there was a little town in England called Piltdown. That's why it ended up being called Piltdown Man. And it turns out that somebody had gotten this skull. The skull happened to turn out to be that of a certain woman from an Indian tribe, a modern Indian tribe. So this is a modern human skull from a certain race of individuals. Someone had cut that skull in half, and they stained it with iron to make it look really old. Then they took those two pieces, and they buried the first one in Piltdown, England. And so this amateur geologist came and said he had this. He wanted them to look at the, you know, he came to Dr. Woodward and said, I want you to look at this. I found this, and, you know, and I want you to look at it. And so there was this, you know, he examined it, and he, you know, said, this looks legitimate. And so they began to look for more. And several, can't remember if it was months or years later, they found another skull. Well, of course, that turned out to be the other half of this skull. And again, it had been doctored as well. It had been stained with iron and so on. And so there were these two skulls that had been found. And so this, you know, that was part of this whole elaborate scheme. It turns out the other thing that they discovered was that the jaw and the teeth ultimately... The other thing to note here is that Dr. Woodward passed away, I believe it was in the 1940s, and so it was about 10 years later when they finally were starting to figure these things out. But up until that time, Dr. Woodward had kept very, very close, you know, kept this concealed and locked away in a safe, and it was very hard for anyone to actually look at the fossils. There were pictures that were published, but people couldn't actually go and look at it. And this is actually a point that Dr. Werner, who's written some of these books that has a lot of this information, he makes the point that the very same story is true today, and we'll see more about that. But when they finally were able to physically look at the skull and the teeth, when they looked closely, they realized that the jaw was actually from an orangutan and that the teeth had been literally filed, and then they had been stained to make them look very old. And so, again, a complete hoax that was made up here. But kind of the reason it's in here is for a couple of reasons. Number one, don't believe everything you read. Okay, this, I've been trying to repeat this through this whole series, right? So there's publications that are supposed to be prominent, well-known, reputable publications that we've seen proven over and over in some of these that they again know the information is false. In this case, they didn't necessarily know right away. But the other thing is that there were a number of very, very well-known scientists who were all involved in this, and they weren't necessarily part of the hoax, but just look at some of the names here. Again, we have Dr. Woodward. He was a very well-known paleontologist throughout the world. He was the director at the Natural History Museum in London. Of course, everybody looks, you know, to that as one of the prominent museums. There was a Dr. Grafton Smith. He was the chairman of anatomy at the University College in London and a specialist in primate brains. Here was his statement after observing the skull. He says, "We must regard this as being the most primitive and most simian, that is, ape-like, human brain so far recorded." So here are these experts, and they either have to be in on the hoax or they're just, you know, they're fooled by it, right? And they're fooled, you know, again, the teeth were filed with a file, and eventually the ones that discovered it, they looked closely at it, and they realized there's file marks on these teeth, okay? So you have to ask yourself, well, how did it get past all these people on this list? How did they not notice these file marks? How did they not notice that this skull had been painted with these chemicals and things like that? So again, in my mind, they're either part of the hoax, or we need to realize, well, just because they claim to be experts doesn't mean they can't be fooled, right? And that they're not necessarily the experts. When they say it, you know, this is the most primitive and ape-like human skull we've ever found, well, that's what he thought, but he was wrong. Dr. Arthur Keith, he was president of the Royal Anthropological Institute in England, okay? What did he say about it? He says, this is by far the most important discovery ever made in England and of equal, if not greater, consequence than any other discovery ever made, okay? So at the time, they were saying, this is the greatest fossil find ever made. All turned out to be a hoax.
It was made.
Ever crafted. Another professor of comparative anatomy at Oxford. Okay, Oxford, again, is a very prominent institution. What did he say? We have in our hands at last. Okay, how many times? Here's another one. This was back in 1912. At last, the much talked of missing link. They finally found it, the missing link. It is the most startling and significant fossil bone that has ever been brought to light. And then there's another statement. Here's a professor of dental surgery at King's College. He performed x-ray and exams of Piltdown Man's teeth. Now again, how could you claim to be a professor of dental surgery and not, you know about the file marks on the teeth? Again, that's why I sort of have to believe at least ones like this maybe were part of a hoax as well. But anyway, all of this is here to make the point that when we get our textbooks and we have our professors, like John's professor was saying, you know, evolution is a fact and slamming his fist on the podium, we've got to realize this has been going on for a long, long time. And we don't need to be intimidated by these so-called experts. Now, Piltdown Man was one example. Another one that we may have heard of is Lucy. Anybody here ever heard of Lucy? Lucy was discovered in the 1970s. Lucy was considered to be perhaps one of the most important ape-man discoveries in the late 1900s. It was discovered by Dr. Donald Johansson in South Africa. He discovered the skeleton. So the non-white, the darker colored pieces are the original fossil pieces, and then the white parts here are the parts that they make out of plaster or, you know, some kind of resin to fill in what they believe the rest of the skeleton looks like. So it was about a 40% complete skeleton. It included, you know, pelvis and parts of the jaw and arms and leg bones and things like that. And just for reference, this is about 3.5 feet tall. So Dr. Johansson claimed that the knee was human-like. And Kind of what's interesting, again, there's a long story behind this, just like there is about so many of these discoveries, but on the expedition, Johansson and one other doctor were sort of co-leads for that expedition, and interestingly, he was making this claim that the knees were human-like. The co-director disagreed with that. Another point is that there's a Dr. Dwayne Gish, who is a pretty well-known doctor in the creation scientist community. He's published some books fighting this as well, but he happened to be in a class at UC Irvine when Dr. Johansson spoke, and Dr. Johansson actually said with his own mouth that his own computer analysis said that the knee was ape-like. It fell right in the middle of what an ape knee would look like, and he sort of sounded like he just did a lot of hand-waving and sort of convinced himself and others that nevertheless it was human-like, despite what the computer analysis showed. The other bigger concern, though, is that the original pelvis was ape-like. And why is it written this way? Why do I say the original pelvis? Well, because it turns out that one of Johansson's colleagues heavily modified the pelvis to look like a human pelvis. So that if you look, I don't have the pictures in the slides here, but if you look at the differences between a human pelvis and ape pelvis, they're very different, and it's sort of what paleontologists use to help identify that, you know, apes that lean over and kind of walk on all fours, their pelvises are very, very different. And what they discovered, again, after years and after access to the skeleton actually was, you know, made available, they realized that it had been heavily, heavily modified. Around 1983, so that's roughly about 10 years later, some anatomists began to raise questions about Lucy's ability to walk uprightly. That's the claim that Dr. Johansson was trying to say, is that it's human-like, and therefore this is a transitional form that looks like an ape. It's only 3.5 feet tall, but he's starting to walk upright. And even today, this is an article, a cover from a science magazine from, I think it was last year, within the last couple of years, you know, where they still like to depict Lucy, and it's also not very apparent that Lucy's only 3.5 feet tall, but they like to depict Lucy as again, an upright walking ape. And there was a lot, as we just pointed out, there was a lot of work done on that pelvis to rework it to make it look like it was more like a human pelvis. By 1990, paleoanthropologists began to reject the claim that Lucy is a direct ancestor. There's quotes like this. This is from the chairman of human origins at the Smithsonian Institute, and he said, "I and many others believe Lucy needs to be replaced." So at this point, a lot of scientists have gotten to the point where they believe that Lucy really is not part of the human ancestry. And these are evolutionists I'm talking about. Of course, we don't believe that at all. But even among the evolutionary scientists, as this was an article from last year where the headline is, "After 50 years, Lucy faces rivals for the title of mother of us all." So there's other, as scientists are sort of alluding to, we need to replace Lucy here, that it's not fitting that Lucy could be an ancestor for humankind. And so, and then there's other statements. And again, these are not statements from creationists. These are statements coming from the ones who have been studying and pushing evolution for their entire lives. I mean, here's a professor who was a winner of the Charles Darwin Lifetime Achievement Award. I mean, that's just not an award that any of us would ever want to be associated with, right? But nevertheless, he makes the point. Many people nowadays are taking Australopithecines off the direct line to humans. So Lucy's kind of losing steam at this point, but nevertheless, you know, like the headline here says, Lucy made really, really big headlines for 40, 50 years, and now kind of losing some steam. But I remember when I was in grade school that the Lucy was all the, that was all the rage with the film strips and things that we were watching at the time. So again, all of that to illustrate that there's a lot of falsification that is going on. The next one on the list here, so if you recall, last week we ended and we sort of got a two for one on that one. We got this one and we got this one because this was Homo erectus here, and this was Solo Man, and they were originally classified as different species, and over the course of 20 or so years, they figured out that actually Solo Man, along with a bunch of other ones, all kind of got combined down into just Homo erectus. And so we talked about Homo erectus and how now today scientists believe that Homo erectus is just another form of modern human. So the one that we didn't cover yet that was between those two is what the chart here calls early Homo sapiens. And again, well, Homo sapiens is what humans are classified as, right? So the one in the far right is Homo sapien, that's us. And so we have to remember kind of the purpose of this chart is to try to explain the sequence of these transitional forms leading up to humankind, right? That's what evolution is. And so the purpose of the chart is to paint this pretty picture of how these different creatures evolved. And so, as Dr. Werner pointed out in the book, I mean, when you think about it, well, I mean, early Homo sapiens is still Homo sapiens, is it not, right? It's no, scientists don't argue here that this is some transitional form. It's still a human. It's a different race, you know, different characteristics. And as we pointed out in the slides last week, there's a massive amount of variation. Even today, if you looked at different features of skulls and skeletons and things like that, of living people today, there is a lot of variation. And so again, the conclusion here really is that you know, this is just another human here, and putting two of the same species in the chart is really deceptive, and but we shouldn't be too surprised about them being deceptive. So then we come to the next one here, which the chart refers to as Rhodesian Man. So this skull, upper part of a skull, was discovered in 1921. A few years later, they reclassified this again, as well as a number of other discoveries, as Homo heidelbergensis. So some of you may have heard of Heidelberg Man, and that was one of the discoveries, obviously, that was made in Heidelberg, Germany. There were other discoveries made in other parts of the world as well. When those discoveries were initially made, you might remember a quote we had from our last slide, but one scientist noted, you know, pretty much every time they discover, you know, a fossil somewhere, they pretty much want to try to put it into a new species, because they want to be able to make the claim that they've discovered some great new, you know, ape man, and become rich and famous. And so that happens over and over and over. I believe it's either this one or Neanderthal Man, where they had like 40 different species over the different fossils that were discovered, and it really all boils down to just one. So it's similar story for many of these. But this Rhodesian Man, or the Heidelberg Man, kind of the big characteristics here are that they have these large brow ridges and kind of a slanted forehead. And what people pointed out, even at the time, but you know, it's also, you know, been pointed out many times ever since, is that, well, there's actually modern races today, particularly, you know, some good examples are ones like Aborigines and the Australia that have prominent features like that. And so these features are, you know, still ones that we can find in modern human races. And so we have statements, even from Dr. Howell, again, the one who put this sequence together. He made this statement. He said, Rhodesian man is an extinct race of Homo sapiens. So just like he put the early Homo sapiens in right before this, he put this Rhodesian man in after it, but yet he knew and believed at that time that it was just an extinct race of Homo sapiens. So again, he's being very misleading here. Why would he put this in the chart when the chart is supposed to be showing us these transitional forms that are sort of halfway, you know, creatures between one species and another? And so we have modern scientists today that believe, most scientists believe that Rhodesian man or species, Homo heidelbergensis, is really just Homo sapiens. And we have statements like this. This is from a paleontologist from the University of Chicago, where he says, Rhodesian man today is considered an early form or early variety of Homo sapiens. So again, today scientists don't see this as a transitional form. They believe that it is yet another Homo sapien. And so that brings us to the next one here, Neanderthal man. Neanderthal man was discovered first. There were about 16 bones that were discovered in the Neander Valley in Germany in 1856. A few years later, 1908, so roughly 50 years later, there was a pretty complete skeleton. That's the picture that's shown here. That is a pretty complete skeleton. Was found in France in 1908. And it was found by a Dr. Boole, who was the director of the Institute of Human Paleontology at the Natural History Museum in Paris. I'm sorry, it wasn't discovered by him, but it was analyzed by him. And he looked at it, and he said that this indeed is an ape man, some type of a transitional creature between apes and mankind. And again, it created all kinds of sensational headlines all over the world. This is a picture, for example, from the Illustrated London News from 1909. And this is, you know, this is the skeleton that, you know, they had found in France. And this is, you know, kind of what they concluded that he must have looked like based on that. And you know, this is just one of many, many, many examples. But again, if we're living back in this time, you know, this isn't like the National Enquirer that's publishing this story, right? This is coming from the London Illustrated Times, right, or Illustrated News, and you know, going out to other very well-known papers such as the New York Times and so on. So, again, it made very sensational headlines. But as time went on, and as, again, Dr. Boole passed away in 1942. Okay, so after 1942, scientists began to get more access to the skeleton here, to be able to look at it for themselves and not just to simply rely on what Dr. Boole was telling the world. And so this table here really is just trying to summarize kind of what he was saying and what it turned out to be. So as far as the skull reconstruction, well, it turns out that Dr. Boole did a lot of skull reconstruction, and he actually painted the filled-in parts to look like the original. Now, if you remember from a few minutes ago, the skeleton of Lucy, there's the original-looking bones, and then there's these white parts, right? And so why do they do that? Well, why don't they just paint the white parts to look like the original? Because they're trying to be honest, right, to some degree, to say, well, here's what was originally found, and then here's the parts that we filled in. Well, what is that what Dr. Boole did? No, he reconstructed the skull, and he painted it meticulously to look like the original. He also indicated that the opening to the skull, where the spinal column enters the skull, he said it was more towards the rear of the skull, which is more ape-like. And when scientists were actually able to look at it, they discovered that he had moved it. Again, when he reconstructed the skull, well, he shifted the hole back a little bit. And when they looked at it, they realized, well, that wasn't just an accident. They actually made some official accusations against Dr. Bull that he had committed fraud. Some of his colleagues at the time, it was actually after his death, but at this museum of natural history, they said, well, look, it looks like he falsified this skull. He said the shape of the leg bone indicated that Neanderthal man walked like an ape. And he ignored the fact that a lot of humans that squat very frequently, they have a very similar abnormality in their leg bones. And this was a known fact at that time. Somehow he just didn't seem to catch on to that and didn't make that known. Just said, well, this looks like an ape leg. He got a little bit lazier on the neck bones, okay? He said the neck bones were chimp-like. So instead of changing the neck bones of Neanderthal man, he actually just changed the picture of the human neck bones to make it look different than what the Neanderthal bones look like. And so, again, he was trying to show that the Neanderthal was sort of ape-like. And so he's trying to highlight these differences. He said the next thing here is he said the straight neck of Neanderthal man caused him to incline forward. When his colleagues were able to actually look at those bones, they realized, well, it had severe arthritis. And so there really would not be any way to know if the neck was straight or not. And again, they felt like it was clear enough that this was, again, a case of fraud on his part, and his own colleagues from that museum kind of called him on that. Again, I think it was after the fact, but nevertheless, they said they believe he committed fraud here. He claimed that the feet were ape-like. When they actually got the chance to look at those, they said it's not ape-like. These feet are human, just like we have. And again, we talked about the receding forehead and the large brow ridges. And many scientists have pointed out that there are humans today that have these kinds of features. And so because of all these things that they were finally able to figure out once they really had access to those bones, they drastically changed the picture. So instead of the ape-like picture that we saw a minute ago, this is the more modern version of what they say Neanderthal man looks like. It actually kind of looks like one of my old bosses a little bit. But I mean, is there any comparison between this and this? Again, this is a modern man, and evolutionists point this out. Again, we have a quote from Dr. Wolpoff, who is an evolutionist. He said, quote, "If you put a Neanderthal on a bus and put him in modern clothes, people would not particularly find them different from moderns. Neanderthals had brow ridges. Some modern Europeans also have brow ridges." So his point is, if you dress them up like we dress, you probably wouldn't notice them on a bus. So bottom line is that scientists believe that Neanderthal man is, a Homo sapien. He's not anything ape-like, any kind of a transitional creature. So despite scientists' best efforts to try to, change things and interpret things, eventually, so far, the truth is coming out. It's, as we're seeing in some cases, it's taking decades for the truth to eventually come out. All right, we're up to the next to the last one here, Cro-Magnon man. So there were five skeletons found in 1868 in France. Chancelade man, Combe-Capelle, Grimaldi cave skeletons. So there was a period of time here. There were five skeletons found in 1868, and then there were a number more that were found in the following years, 1888 to 1909. So before 1965, up until that point, and again, it was kind of hinged on when some actual ability to look at some things closely came about. But up until that point, prominent scientists incorrectly interpreted these skeletons as some form of ape man. Today, nearly all scientists believe that Cro-Magnon is, again, fully human, yet another Homo sapien. Even here's another case where even Dr. Howell is on record. Again, Dr. Howell, who put the chart sequence together, in 1965, he said Cro-Magnon men were fully modern men. So, I mean, again, you have to ask the question, why did he put that on the chart if he believed that they were fully modern men? It's, you know, again, it's interesting to do some research and you find out what, you know, that they really were knowingly being deceptive here. Again, we come through, we've gone through 14 of these 15. We're not going to go through the last one because that's us. We know who we are, right? But we also know now that all of these so-called transitional forms are either some form of an actual ape, which is the first few on this chart, and then as we've seen on these final ones, the remainder are some form of Homo sapiens. And as many, beginning back with Homo erectus, you may recall that scientists have said, well, if you saw them in public and they were dressed like we are, there wouldn't be anything to notice about them that you could recognize and say they were that different. And so, but yet, we have all of these scientists who are trying to paint these fossils into something that they're not. So we come to this point. Where do things stand today then? That chart was published in 1965. If you go and you read Wikipedia and a lot of literature, I mean, as we saw some of those magazine covers, I mean, even Lucy, right? They're still, they're not saying at this point that Lucy's not a descendant, right? They're saying, well, Lucy's getting some competition, right? So they're not going to, and they're still portraying Lucy as this walking upright ape, despite the fact that we saw that there was intentional falsification and redoing the pelvis to make it look ape-like or to make it look human and so on. So, but when it all comes down to it today, we have statements like this. And again, this is from a curator from the American Museum of Natural History, not that many, 9 years ago. What does he say? He says, we still don't know exactly who the ancestral ape was or what the ancestral ape was that gave rise to both the modern human and the ape lineages. It's really funny when you look at some of these quotes, they like to insert this word exactly in there. We don't know exactly, as if they know mostly, right? It sort of implies that they mostly know, but they just don't know exactly. Well, they actually don't know at all, right, is the real truth, right? They don't know. They don't know who. They don't know what. So here we are, you know, 170 years after Darwin's theory was published, 150 years after his book on humans being, you know, evolved, and they're still saying, you know, they don't know. And so we shouldn't be surprised. I mean, this is going to continue to play out like this over and over. But it does, all of this should make us understand that the devil is very much at work. There is rampant fraud here in the field of human evolution. Dr. Werner, who put the series together that I was getting a lot of this information from, he's actually put together a very specific list of 150 instances of fraud on human evolution. And these are things that he's compiled over the course of 27 years of interviews and putting this book material together. He's gone through thousands of fossil photographs, thousands of newspaper and science articles, dozens of books, and he readily says, "Hey, there's hundreds and hundreds of mistakes that scientists have made over the years," and we can understand. All scientists make mistakes, and he says, "Yep, there's definitely those for sure. There's hundreds of those," but he said, "There's also," and it's interesting also because he put this at the end of his. He said, as he was just about done, he said he pretty much had the book series together, and I guess it makes the point that he sort of was coming at this maybe a little bit naively, in the sense that. He said it didn't really become apparent to him until he had gone through and got nearly to the end of the series that, hey, this isn't just accident. There's actual fraud going on here. There's a lot of examples here that people are intentionally misleading and changing things and leading people astray. And so that's what then led him to put together the list of the specific instances of those things. And So here's a list of maybe a dozen or so of out of his list of 150. But the point I wanted to make here is that the names and the institutions of the ones involved in these actual instances of fraud, these are names that many of us have heard in school as we've come up. Certainly, a lot of these institutions are ones we've heard of. I mean, some of us have visited the Natural History Museum of London. I mean, people every day stand for hours and hours in line, right, to see these amazing fossils that they have on display. Now you have to ask, well, how many of those fossils, particularly the human related ones, have been doctored? We don't know, but. You can go through the list, though, and you see, these very well-known institutions, whether it's and all over the world, right? The Natural History Museum of London, Belgium, Paris, in the U.S., the American Museum of Natural History. There's a couple of or a few instances of corruption there. I didn't notice anything on the Smithsonian, which is interesting, but. It seems like the American Museum of Natural History in New York got caught red-handed on a few things, and then we have a lot of well-known scientists. They're not necessarily well-known to us, but in the field of paleontology, some of these were the. Some of these, like this last one here in Argentina, this Dr. Ameghino. I mean, he was a national figure. They even named a crater on the moon after this guy. I mean, he's got statues all over Argentina. I mean, he's one of the most well-known scientists in Argentina. But he completely made up a bunch of finds, right? It was all modern human beings that he found, and it was all made up. We didn't even go into that because it was just so... so off, but there's literally people that made their entire careers. They lived and died, and they died a national hero, and they made their careers off of complete lies. And there's people willing to do that, and it really shouldn't surprise us, right? We know that the Lord sends strong delusion to the ones that won't acknowledge Him as Creator, and these ones are. Under the strong delusion, and they're working for Satan, and if they're doing that, lying is no big deal, is it? And a whole lot of other things. And so it's really pretty astounding, though, that some of the ones that you see on this list, that they literally lied their way through their careers to get that fame and fortune. We're going to jump briefly. So there's one listed here. I'm trying to find it, John. There it is. Okay, Dr. Ernst Haeckel. He was one of the maybe one of the early ones because it wasn't directly a fossil, but it was a claim that we're going to jump to and just talk a little bit about what he did and how that has come into play over the years. So Dr. Haeckel came along roughly about 20 years, actually it was only about 7 years, I'm sorry. In 1866, Ernst Haeckel, again, he was right there with Charles Darwin at that time. So he took Darwin's idea and he basically constructed this illustration of the human embryonic stages. So as we are conceived in the womb and as we go through all these stages over those 40 weeks, there's some pretty amazing things that we can see, right? And so what he did was he took a lot of what he had was pictures from his colleagues where they had taken pictures at different points. But what he did is he took those and he compiled this drawing of embryonic development. And his idea that he put forth based on Darwin's thinking here is that the human embryo goes through all the stages of our evolutionary history. So the idea is that, well, if humans have this common ancestor that goes way back, his idea was, wow, it'd be really cool if the human embryo went through all those stages on the way to becoming a human. So that was his claim. And it sounds pretty crazy, doesn't it? But it's also...
From one cell to human.
Yeah. And... Brother John's mentioned this statement here. I think this is good for the ones that know biology. But the sort of the decoder for that is that the evolution of one repeats the evolution of the race. And so that's what the idea here was. And so, for example, here's an evolution explaining the concept. He says all mammal embryos, for example, pass through a stage in which they have gills like a fish, showing that mammals are descended from fish-like ancestors. I remember a few years ago, someone gave me a picture. There was actually a PBS series called Our Inner Fish. And somebody who was a teacher at a local school, one of his co-teachers had sent this out, saying this series is getting ready to come on. It's going to be really good. So literally, our inner fish. And, that's the idea that along the way, we have these gills like a fish. And so this is the chart that Haeckel came up with. And it's really pretty sick when you think about it. But the thing that's really crazy is that it didn't take long, even back in 1866. Haeckel's colleagues condemned his illustrations. They even noted that he had altered some of their drawings. So he sort of plagiarized a little bit as well, which, again, if you're going to lie, deceive, plagiarism's no big deal, right? And so he actually took some of his colleagues' illustrations and tweaked them around a little bit as coming up with that chart. And... He took the same image of an embryo three times. One time he labeled it as human, another as a dog, and the third as a rabbit. Different ones note that his work was, quote, the culmination of the extremes of exaggeration which followed Darwin. So it was all, based going back to the things that Darwin said. So it wasn't long after these were published that these ideas were shown to be completely false. So remember, this was 1866. So it was roughly about 20 years later that they really had all the evidence they needed at that time. So that would have been 1886 that they really knew that this was false. 1886.
In 1986, I took a course called Comparative Vertebrate Morphology, one of my undergraduate courses, and that stuff was in there.
There you go. And exactly. So that's why I'm making this point that 1866, was when he published it. Within 20 years, these ones had come out and said that these are fraudulent pictures. This is not correct. And so, you know, the point here is, at this point, we've known for 150 years that this is not correct. Humans do not possess gill slits. Even evolutionists like George Gaylord Simpson said it is now firmly established that this is not true. So they've been saying it for a long, long time. Sir Arthur Keith, that's one of those paleontologists that we talked about, and he said it was expected that the embryo would recapitulate the features of its ancestors from the lowest to the highest forms. Okay, Arthur Keith lived, and he was a paleontologist that was very well known in London back in the early 1900s. And he says, now that the appearances of the embryo at all stages are known, the general feeling is one of disappointment. Picture didn't quite work out. He goes on to say, the embryo of the mammal never resembles the worm, the fish, or the reptile. Embryology provides no support whatsoever for the evolutionary hypothesis. So this, I should have had the date put down on this one, but it would have been, back in the early 1900s that this statement was made. So you had his colleagues calling him out just shortly after he published it. You had very well-known paleontologists saying there is no evidence whatsoever for this, you know, even in the early 1900s. Another evolutionist, the so-called basic law of biogenetics is wrong. No buts or ifs can mitigate this fact. It's not even a tiny bit correct, or correct in a different form. It is totally wrong. So we have scientists on record that said this is completely, totally incorrect. But as John pointed out, this stuff is still being taught. We've known at least since the 1920s that they're completely wrong. But it's still published, at least up through, you said, 1986?
Yeah. Not so much now. You will still find it in modern publications where it will be, even though they'll have some acknowledgement of inaccuracy, it's still there for its historical significance
And kind of to your point, I mean, so here's a few examples. 2004, National Geographic, published an article where the author used this idea of Haeckel's embryonic recapitulation as proof of evolution. So they're still leaning on it very heavily, despite the statements that we've read from scientists that have said that there's no fact, there's no evidence whatsoever, right? 2001 program produced by the University of Chicago stated all mammals have gill slits in their very early fetal development. So here's the early 2000s where they're still making these completely false statements. 1998, there was a book, Biology Principles and Explorations, that presented a picture of Haeckel's embryos without even hinting that they were incorrect. So, and then 2001, a professor from Harvard published a book that presented the very same thing. So again, at least up through 2001 here. 2002, cover story for Time, described the latest discoveries of embryonic development, including Haeckel's false ideas, where, for example, the Time article said, at 32 days, emerging arms and legs still resemble flipper-like paddles. At 40 days, a human embryo looks no different than that of a pig, chick, or elephant. All have a tail, a yolk sac, and rudimentary gills. So this is published in 2002 in Time magazine. These kinds of things also are used by ones to support things like abortion. So for example, in 1990, Carl Sagan. So Carl Sagan was a very well-known astronomer. Series back in the around that time, a little bit before that, the 80s.
But he and his wife, a few years later, published an article defending abortion on the grounds that an unborn child is not a human being. And we hear that today, don't we? We hear people use the term fetus, right? And again, it goes back to this idea that Darwin propagated, right? That there's all these transitional forms, and we're not really human until we get to the end here. And Sagan went so far as to say that the embryo begins as a kind of a parasite that eventually looks like a segmented worm. And then he goes on and talks about the gills, like that of a fish, and then reptilian features emerge, and then pig-like traits. And then he says, by the end of 2 months, according to these two authors, the creature resembles a primate, but is still not quite human. Okay, so no problem to kill your babies here, because they're not human. There's all kinds of justifications that folks will come up here with. And so, we have the evidence, very, very strong, undeniable evidence today. It's very clear that there's never a point along the way that we look reptilian or pig-like. It's always human from the moment of conception. And so, like Brother John was pointing out, even in the 1980s, 9 out of 15 high school biology books had these pictures. Over 100 years after he published that, and well after they knew it was false. Here's another telling statement from a Princeton University professor. Here's a head of the biology department at Princeton. He admits here why the universities and high schools still use these drawings. He says, quote, "We may have known for almost 100 years that Haeckel's theory of the origin is probably nonsense." It certainly is. We saw a number that made that point. He says, but it is so clear-cut, so simple, so easy to hand full-blown to the student. Here's a professor just saying we're lying. We know this is wrong, but it's so clear-cut and it's so simple. It's so easy to just hand it to a student and tell them the story. And so, again, this goes back to, the story of human evolution. That's the story. It's supposed to be, according to them, clear-cut, and they want it to sound clear-cut, but we need to recognize that we're dealing with the same problem here today that has been going on for centuries. We'll come back to a couple things, and then we'll be done here. Two more slides. I kind of alluded to this earlier, that Dr. Warner, he actually was planning, he got through the list of 14 creatures on Dr. Howard's evolution chart, and so his plan was to do another volume covering the current set of so-called human ancestors. But he made the point here. He says many of the key scientists would not agree to be interviewed. They wouldn't make themselves available or share images of their fossils or allow them to be photographed. Okay, well, that, if you read through his books, this is not new, right? This is the repeating theme over and over and over. Many times, as I kind of mentioned earlier, it wasn't until the scientists died that others then had access to the fossils, and then they could make the realization, oh, it was false. And so we're seeing very similar behavior today where you can't get an interview, you can't get pictures, you can't get your hands on this so-called evidence that they have. And so he makes a statement which is very true. He says, this unwillingness to give access is a stunning rebuke to the scientific foundation of the theory of human evolution. He says, without access, the theory of evolution is rendered non-verifiable, non-disprovable, and therefore non-scientific. It's a very valid point. That's not science, right? This is not science that we have people today, paleontologists today, at the most prominent institutions. using science. They say they are, but when you can't look at it, you can't verify it, you can't test it, that's not science. And so we have the very same problem that the Apostle Paul wrote about to Timothy, 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 20. We've hit on this a number of times, but we're going to stop on this as well. He says, keep that which is committed to thy trust, avoiding profane and vain babblings and oppositions of science, falsely so called. It's called science, but it's not. And that's the problem that we have today. Everybody wants to lean on this statement that says, well, I believe the science. And we need to realize, well, the science is false. So we have all of these people standing on this false science, just like they did 2,000 years ago when this was written. And so this is not a new problem. The devil's been deceiving since the beginning, and it's getting more and more prolific. And he states the result, right? What's going to happen if we don't avoid these things? Well, at that time, he says, which some professing have erred concerning faith. I mean, we're losing many because they're believing these lies. And so that's why we spent all this time over these months, you know, trying to point out what the scriptures say, trying to point out, you know, what the real evidence shows, and trying to point out lately here the amazing falsehoods that are being committed even for many decades at this point, where they knowingly are publishing lies. And so we need to be aware of that, not fooled and deceived by Satan's lies. So that's it. Any questions or comments? John, you have one more next week. Is that right? Okay.
All right, we're going to...